Hello, everybody, and welcome to the biweekly Q&A call for Inner Circle students. What's happening?
It's Hi. Happening.
Hey, how's Larry. Everybody doing?
Good.
Great.
Awesome, awesome. Well, if it's your first time joining us, this is the biweekly Q&A call for Inner Circle students only. So if you're on this call, you are an Inner Circle member. Make sure you sign up at the official Larry Goins Inner Circle Facebook group, request to join that, where people are networking and conversing with each other about deals and whatnot. There's also an official, make sure you type in the word official. There's an old group out there that was started by somebody else, but join the official Larry Goins student group and the official Larry Goins Inner Circle group as well. So if it's your first time on here, it's pretty casual, pretty laid back. I will not mute the lines unless somebody's trying to watch TV or, you know, hanging out in a bar or your dogs are barking or your kids are screaming. So I will leave the lines open, and it's really cool. Look, Jody already asked to join. Look at that. You go, girl. So anyway... So we'll keep it pretty laid back and just take turns with each other, and I'll stay on here absolutely as long as anyone needs. So with that, who would like to go first and ask Larry a question?
I got one.
Hey, Larry.
Go ahead.
Hey, Larry, this is Julie from Tucson. Hi, sweetie.
What's
hey,
up? How are you doing?
I'm doing mighty fine. Wholesaled a house out there yesterday for $24,000.
You wholesaled a house out here yesterday?
No, in Tucson. I got
awesome. You go, girl. I'm really proud of you. I've been bragging on you to other people.
I got a story for Candace, too, for the bragging, too.
Awesome. That's great.
But I have a question. Selling the notes, because now I've got three. I got one in Texas, one in Florida, and the one here in Arizona that I've done. But I have a note buyer here in Arizona who's a friend.
Right.
So how do I find note buyers that want to buy?
Lincoln, Texas.
Like manufactured homes, because some of them don't want any parts of that. And
right.
Then unseasoned.
Okay. Now, here's the best way for me to put this, okay? There we go. I just approved a couple of people to join the group. All right, so, Jeremy, what's up? So, when you're selling notes, Celie, here's the
yes.
deal. If you're selling to an institution, you're probably going to need to season it for at least
okay.
6 months, okay?
Gotcha.
Now, what I like to do is sell them to individuals.
That's what I'm doing.
So what you need to do is just find people who are looking for passive income. You know, they're all around you. They're people who come to the RIA group. Maybe they have money, but they're not interested in doing a lot of work. Because there's active
correct.
Investors and passive investors. There's real estate
uh-huh.
as a business, and real estate is an investment. You want to find the people who just want a check, who just want to write a check and then collect a monthly check without having to do any work. Okay?
Gotcha.
So look around at the RIA group. If I were you, I would also go to the Phoenix group there. I know you're in Tucson. But drive out once a month and go to the Phoenix group and talk about, hey, I have notes for sale, get on my note buyers list, earning passive
right, right.
of X to X. And also, Facebook groups are good, too.
The what, hon?
Facebook groups are also good to promote your notes on.
Oh, didn't think of that, but you know what?
Well, also, LinkedIn groups are great. There's note buyer LinkedIn groups as well.
Oh, really?
Yes, there are.
Wow. Okay, cool.
Good.
I know her. I think I know her.
How about that? Does that help?
That helps. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. So who else has a question?
Hey, Larry. This is Jeremy.
What's up, buddy? Congratulations on your deal.
Yeah, thanks. And it's about that. What would you recommend as a way of getting a proof of funds letter? So right now our capital, investment capital right now is tied up, but a lot of these people, we still keep putting offers, but some of them want proof of funds. Is there a way that you'd recommend doing that?
Yes. Go to either – here's what you could do. You could either go to realestatedayfunding.com.
Okay.
Or you can go to what is it called? PrivateMoneyGoldMine.com, or just Google transaction funding proof of funds. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, that'll work. I'll look at those.
Awesome. Awesome. Sounds good. Awesome. You guys are asking to join the groups. I've already approved several here tonight. Excellent. Good. Who else has a question?
Dan Hake here. Based on Dean's input, I've been prowling in Mississippi.
I can barely hear you. I can't understand a thing you're saying.
Yeah, I can't hear him either.
Try it again.
Mary.
I've been trying. This is Dan Hake. And I've been working Mississippi looking for opportunities. And I find a lot of places are nice places, but they're way far away from any community that would have industry or business. And I wonder just what the story is on people building far away from town.
People? Did you say people building far away from town?
Building, yeah. In other words, they've got nice homes,
uh-huh.
But they're far away from places that they would make an income.
Uh-huh.
And they're not farming country.
So I'm not sure what your question is.
Okay, who would buy these homes away from communities?
Who would buy a home in a small town? Is that what you're saying?
Even in a remote from a small town.
You mean rural areas?
Rural.
I think that's what he means, Laugh.
I think you're right. Well, here's the thing. First of all, I'm going to ask you, are you wholesaling or are you seller financing? Okay? It does make a difference. Which are you doing?
We plan on doing either one depending upon who turns up.
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, let me address this. Who turns up is going to be who you're marketing for, all right? For example, if I'm wholesaling a property, I'm putting out about 25 signs that say foreclosure, and they'll have the price. Maybe I picked it up for $30,000, and I'm advertising it for $44,900, all right? And it says foreclosure, and I'm running ads on Craigslist. I'm putting out signs. You know, if I got it from an individual, I'm putting it out on Zillow. And the key is those 25 bandit signs that go all around the neighborhood in front of Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, convenience stores, libraries, and all kind of stuff like that. So if I'm wholesaling, I'm putting out a foreclosure sign. If I'm seller financing it, I'm putting out a sign that says owner financing, and then it's going to have my phone number, but I'm going to write a few things in it, like three-bedroom, two-bath, 1,400 square feet, 2 acres of land, something like that, and especially like in the rural areas, you might even say something like horses welcome, bring your horses, or something like that. You know, even if it's got like a fenced in little paddock or something, you could say something about ready for horses or something. You know, anything that you could appeal to, you know, anything that that property would have that would appeal to a potential buyer, I would put that on the sign. You know, 2 acres of land, bring your horses, storage building included, you know, or whatever like that. So it really just depends on what you're marketing for. Now, the reason I ask, it depends on what you're going to do with it, is in the, especially in the more remote areas like rural, it is harder to wholesale a property. However, you do find more seller finance buyers, okay? But here's the thing. Either way, you only need one, okay? And most people in the small towns, they're used to driving. Whereas, like, if you're in a big city and you got to go 10 miles, that could take you 45 minutes to go 10 miles. But in a small town, 10 miles is going to take you about 20 minutes, right? So, or 15 minutes. So it's not that big a deal in a small town. And people are used to living in one town and working in the next town over. In fact, we just ended up, we've got a house in Jamesville or something like that. And I think the next town over was Rayford. So we ended up putting signs all over Rayford because we weren't getting many calls from the Jamesville area. So we went out and re-signed the property and put signs out in the Rayford area, which was a little larger town, but it was one town over, about 8 or 10 miles away. So, so having said that, you know, market for what you're looking for. You only need one buyer, and the smaller the town, the harder it is to wholesale the property, but there are seller finance buyers out there. But remember, you only need one buyer. So if you're concerned about it, when you get it under contract, market the heck out of it as best you can. And if you're not getting much response, you could always back out before you close on it, okay? But market the heck out of it and find out what kind of response you're getting, all right? Or if you're getting response, but people say, oh, nobody wants to live over there. Nobody wants to live over there. You know, you see what I'm saying? So does that help?
I hope. We have a little problem with putting out bandit signs. We're in Arizona, and this is Mississippi I'm talking about. So we will endeavor to find the way to market the properties. Thank you.
You're very welcome. As far as finding somebody to put out your bandit signs, let me give you a few tips about that, okay? Number one, post you an ad on Craigslist, all right? Number two, call temp agencies in that small town or in the next town over. Just look up temp agencies, okay? Or day labor agencies, all right? Look those up. You could also look on Facebook groups in the area, real estate Facebook groups in the area, and post ads on those Facebook groups as well. And also, if there's a RIA group, Real Estate Investors Association or club, or even a meetup group of real estate investors, look on that and reach out to some people there and find out if there's anybody there that would be willing to put out your signs and get paid. Or maybe they could even, you could even say, run an ad such as Investor Seeks Apprentice, looking for boots on the ground. Be my eyes and ears for properties. Learn to invest in real estate, and I'll fund the deal. And then you're like training somebody. You can get them to be your bird dog, so to speak, and then give them a little piece of the deal for helping you out. Showing the property, putting signs out, whatever you need, they can be your boots on the ground gopher.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Hope that helped. Who's next?
Hey, Larry, this is Deb in Matthews. I have a question. Hey, like, for example, do you try to stay within a certain size population geographical area to invest in, like,
no.
population-wise, a certain number? Or?
Oh, I don't want to disappoint you, but I don't get that technical.
Okay.
I really don't. Here's my theory. I make a lot of offers. I see what kind of offers I get counters on. We negotiate the deal. We get it under contract. And then we start marketing the heck out of it. And occasionally, not all the time, but occasionally, or I shouldn't say not all the time, not even half the time, but occasionally we'll find one that we're just getting a lot of negative response, like you don't want to live in this neighborhood. Nobody wants to live in this neighborhood. This is a rough area, or whatever. And then we'll back out on that deal, okay? Because there's one thing you can't change about a house. That's the neighborhood, okay? So you can't change the location of a house. So we'll market the heck out of it. If we're getting some good response, we'll go ahead and follow through with it and close on it, okay? Does that kind of answer your question?
So no town is too small then?
I've bought properties in towns that were 900 population.
What?
Wow.
Yeah, just little small towns. In fact, I don't even know what the population of, I believe it's Jamesville or Jamesville or something, North Carolina. I'm going to have to look that up. That's got me curious right now. So I believe it's Jamesville, North Carolina. Jamesville, North Carolina, population. Let me see what it says here. Jamesville, North Carolina, is and this is 2014 results. It's 470. Now you got me a little worried. I'm just kidding. We already have that house sold.
Do you pay what do you pay your bird dogs on the average? Do you pay them by the sun or by the hour? I can't remember.
Well, if it's going to be a boots-on-the-ground person that's going to do more than just the signs, I might pay them maybe $500 when the house sells, okay? Because maybe they're going to go unlock the door a couple of times, you know, show the house or, you know, or talk to buyers or whatever, and they might even be taking buyer lead calls and turning the suspects into prospects or separating the suspects from the prospects. But they also, you know, might just be putting out the signs. If they're just putting out the signs, you might pay them $50 to go put out 25 signs. And it's going to take them about maybe an hour or two, depending on how small the town is.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Great. Good information. Thank you.
Good. You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Awesome. Who's next?
Larry, what are the maybe top one or two things that you would do to start assembling a buyer's list for wholesaling?
A buyer's list for wholesaling. Start running some ads on Craigslist. You could run an ad on Craigslist that says handyman special, fixer upper, cheap, cash. And then you have a picture of a house. Then whenever they call, you say, I'm sorry, that property is no longer available. What are you looking for? I'll put you on my buyer's list. And you could also, if you have a website, that's great. You know, everybody should have a website for people to go to. You know, run ads on Craigslist, put out bandit signs, okay? You would be surprised when you put out bandit signs, whether they're advertising properties or for buyers, you know, sell properties.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, you always get the opposite. Like, we've had people call all off of our LarryBuysHouses.com signs and our GabbyBuysHouses.com signs that say something along the lines of, hey, I saw your sign that says Larry Buys Houses, so do you have any houses available in this area right now? Because I'm looking for a house to buy.
Okay.
So,
okay.
You know, you kind of get some of each whenever you put out the signs like that. So you want to go to your local RIA group, all right? You can also pull up a mailing list of at a place like melissadata.com or listsource.com of the people who own multiple properties in the area. Okay, people who own multiple properties in the area, and if they own 2, 3, 4 properties, they're typically an investor.
Yep.
What was the second one? Melissa Data and List something?
List Source.
Gotcha.
ListSource.com. Those are some really good sources, but I'll tell you this. Now, I have a buyer's list, and we do sell properties through our buyer's list, but also putting out those signs, man, I'm telling you, that is the bomb. It will blow you away how quick you can sell a property by putting out a sign that says foreclosure and put the price on it. And a lot of them are cash buyers. Now, here's what you're going to get with those signs. You're going to get some local landlords, and you're going to get some local wannabe investors that want to fix up a house and flip it or fix it up and rent it out. But you're also going to get, especially in the small towns, and this is something you don't see a lot in the big cities, but in the small towns, you're going to get some people who are buying the house to fix it up and live in it, or you're going to get some parents or grandparents that are buying the house for their son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter to fix it up and live in it. And that you don't see that in the big cities, but you see that in the smaller towns.
Okay.
And they've got
Thanks.
Mattress money, too.
Yep.
So do you recommend building your buyer's list first or waiting until you got a deal before
both.
You build a buyer's
Doing
list?
Doing both at the same time. Yeah, just work on both of them at the same time.
So if you post an ad on Craigslist, do you just use a fake house or a fake deal?
Yep.
Because you don't have one
you
yet?
You just grab a picture off the internet or something and say, handyman special, fixer upper, cheap cash. When they contact you, just say, I'm sorry, that house is already gone. Oh, but that looked like a great deal. Well, I'll let you know if it comes back available, but it's no longer available. Well, where was it? It don't really matter where it was. Tell me what you're looking for, and I'll find it for you.
So what city do you put at your Craigslist ad on?
All of them. Whatever city, whatever city you're going to be buying and selling in, whatever that market is. In other words, like Craigslist, like in the Carolinas, in Craigslist there's a Asheville, a Hickory, Charlotte, Greensboro, Winston, Raleigh, Wilmington, Columbia, all those. So whatever area you're going to be buying in, whatever Craigslist market is closest to that. That's where I would put it.
And not all Craigslists are in a community. I'm working with one that is northern Mississippi. So it covers a lot of territory as opposed to a specific community.
There you go. That's a good point. That's a good point. Some of them cover wider areas than others.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Do you put your website on Craigslist?
You can. You can put your website on there. If you have a website, I think you definitely should.
My goodness.
I think you should.
How often are you reposting your ads on Craigslist to keep them fresh and on the top of the page?
Well, some people say post them every day, but I would say you could post them like every other day or every couple days or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing you got to be careful with when you're posting ads on Craigslist. If you start posting them in a lot of multiple markets, Craigslist is going to ghost your ad. Ghost it, meaning they're gonna flag your ad and shut it down. So I try not to post in too many markets at one time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you use any other websites other than Craigslist?
Use any websites for what?
Other than Craigslist to post your ads on.
Well, you know, Craigslist is the most popular. It's absolutely the most popular, but if there's like a small community paper, a weekly paper, or a thrifty nickel, or penny saver, or something like that, where your house is or where you're buying and selling properties, you can run ads on those as well. But Craigslist is definitely the biggest. Now, you can also post your ads on some of the real estate websites, like Connected Investor is another good one that you can post your properties on. You need to be a member. You can sign up for a free membership, but Connected Investor is a good one. I know the guy who owns that website. In fact, he's in Wilmington. So that's a good spot to post your properties on as well.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Who else has a question?
Larry,
hey,
I have a question.
Hello?
Larry, I have a question.
Sure.
My name is Jeff Jones. I just joined the Inner Circle. I bought this property. It was the first property I bought. I overpaid for it. I was taking the advice of a realtor. I owe $48,000 on it, approximately. The comps in the area, the average sale price for houses like this are $47,800. So I owe about what the average sales are in the area. I was trying to figure, I have a tenant in it now, and they said they'd like to buy it, and I'm trying to figure out how to structure this thing.
You have a tenant that wants to buy it?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And you have how much in the property?
I bought it for $48,000. We put about $15,000 in rehab in it. Yeah, I know. Like I said, it was my first property.
They have about 63
I took the advice of it. Yeah.
We all been
and,
there, honey. Don't feel bad.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Sealy.
We owe $48,000 right now.
Okay.
And I figure if I did owner financing, maybe I could sell it to him for $55,000. I'm thinking.
Well,
I'm guessing.
What is it really worth?
In its current condition, I would say probably what I owe on it's $48,000.
Okay, and how much is the rent?
The rent, we're getting $675 a month for it.
And what is your payment?
Our payment is $595.
Okay, so your payment's $600, and you're getting six. How much for rent?
$675.
Is your payment PITI?
Yes.
Okay, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. Okay,
yes.
So you're making $75 a month, roughly.
Yes.
$80 a month minus any repairs or maintenance or anything. Are they in there on a lease option or just a straight rent?
Just a straight rent.
Okay. So, and they want to buy the property, right?
Yes. Yes, they
okay.
do.
Okay. Can they qualify for a loan or are you going to have to finance it for them?
I checked to see if I have a lender checking on it now to see if they can qualify.
Okay.
And he wants to know what purchase price they would be qualifying for.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And what purchase price did you give them?
I didn't yet. I wanted to talk to you first.
Good. Well, keep it as high as you can. Okay. Keep it as high as you can. All right. And if they're getting their own loan, keep it as high as you can that the property will appraise for that. Okay.
Okay.
That the property will appraise for it.
Can I just jump in here a second also?
Sure.
Find out what kind of down payment assistance might be available in the area because if the appraisal is real important. We just got screwed on one too. But if there's down payment assistance, the more they come to the table with, that's better for your price point.
Absolutely it is. And usually those have to be in like fairly decent sized cities But I would check. Well, where is this property? What city?
Columbus, Ohio.
Okay. I would Google Columbus, Ohio down payment assistance program. Okay.
There is down payment assistance.
Also, is this tenant a veteran by chance?
No, they're not.
Okay. Because there's a lot of programs out there for veterans right now.
Yep. Zero down.
Yeah. Well, not only a zero down VA loan, but there's programs, like Veterans Path Up and Purple Heart Program and some other stuff out there that are helping people. We just had the Purple Heart nonprofit in our office last week telling us about some of their programs. But anyway, so I would check with that. How much money do they have to put down themselves?
Well, they won't tell me until I can give them a price.
They won't tell you?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
I got a word for them.
Keep on renting, right?
Well,
why don't you call a couple agents?
I'm a licensed agent myself now.
In Columbus?
Yes, in Columbus.
Okay. Well, why don't you do a CMA, pull some comps, and find out what you could sell it for?
Well, that's what I did. And that's where I came with the average sale price is $47,800.
Okay.
And we
own
right around
that. That's not
going
to work for you.
Sale or fixed up?
That's the average. Places that are fixed up have sold for as much as $100,000. Minimum sales in the area are $20,000 for like properties.
That's a big range.
It is. Well,
yeah,
there's
that's
a lot
crazy.
Of... There's a lot of bank-owned properties that have been sold in the area, and
they're paying $675. I mean,
yes.
Could you justify $59,900?
That was my number, Larry. I can't believe you said that. And down payment assistance. Beautiful. There we go.
There you go.
Here's what I'm thinking. I might be able to justify the $59,900. With down payment assistance, and then just sell it to them outright as long as they can qualify. I'm probably going to have to do some work on it if I can get that price.
Does it have deferred maintenance?
That's okay. It does, yeah. The renters have been pretty hard on it, and quite frankly, we're in the red on this thing every year because of
the payment. Well, you know
what?
Tell the renters if they want it. They got to fix it up. Tell them the appraisers come and say, listen, you got to get a coat of paint on here. You got to have it spick and span. If you want to buy this house, I'll help you, but you got to help yourself.
Yeah.
Sweat equity.
Yeah.
Okay.
And here's the way you sell that. Look, the price is $69,900, but if you want to get it ready for the appraiser, I'll let you have it for $59,900.
Boom.
I like that. Okay.
Can you sell it for more than it appraises for, though?
No, not. You can't sell it for more than it appraises for if they're going to get conventional financing. If you're seller financing it, you could, but then you run the risk of if you're trying to sell the note, even discounting the note buyer is going to be in this property at retail. So you have to be careful about that when you're selling the note. If you're keeping the note, it's irrelevant. So I think those are all really good ideas between myself and Celie that came up with. But here's another thing, okay? If they don't buy it, now this is a little longer-term solution, but if they don't buy it, I would start doing a lease option on this property. And everybody that moved into it, I would make them give you around $5,000 as option money. Every time they give you that option money, you pay down on that mortgage. I mean, I've got some properties that I've got zero in it because the option money paid off the house between the option money and the rent coming in because I've done lease options four or five times on them, and I've paid them off with the lease option
that's
and the rent.
That's non-refundable?
Option
Correct.
Consideration is non-refundable. You're absolutely right.
You have to say option B. It is not a down payment. You say option C.
Not only that, but you wanna word it correctly because you don't want anything to come up about Dodd-Frank where if you're ever challenged, now it's not even gonna come up unless unless you're ever challenged and you end up in a court of law, which is gonna be rare, but it could happen. But you wanna make sure the option consideration is to be used toward closing cost if and when they close. And then you can verbally tell them anything left over, I will apply it toward your down payment. But and you do not, I repeat, do not give them any rent credit. That could be considered equitable interest. If you're going to make them responsible for repairs, which I always do, put a limit on it. Like the tenant is responsible for the first $250 in repairs each month. Because if you don't put a limit on it and you give them rent credit and the option goes toward the purchase price, any judge could say, well, they're pretty much a homeowner. They got to take care of all the repairs and maintenance, and the money went toward the purchase price, and the, and the monthly rent is going toward purchase price. Then
they're now buyers.
they're buyers. Now, did you comply with Dodd-Frank when you sold them this house? The judge is going to call. The judge is going to call this substance over form. That's a legal term. If it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and quacks like a duck,
it's a duck,
regardless of what paperwork you used. Okay.
So yeah, I remember you saying I was at your Cleveland seminar. That's where I signed up for the.
Cool. Well, you heard me use that exact same thing, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I do have a lender who's going to. I could just have him pre-qualify every person that I do the lease option on. Is that correct?
Right. And here's what you want him to do. You don't even have to do that. You do not have to do that for a lease option as long as you structure it correctly. Now, if you're doing seller financing, yes, have your mortgage broker do that. But if you're not doing seller financing, if you're not doing seller financing and you're doing a lease option, I wouldn't even get a mortgage broker involved. It's just a waste of your time.
All right.
Right?
Okay.
Now,
so
the only reason you would want to get a mortgage broker involved is if you really want that person to get a loan and cash you out. So get your mortgage broker involved if that's the case and say, hey, is this person ever going to really be able to get a loan and pay me off? And the answer, especially on a house that's 59.9, the answer is probably going to be no. Which, personally, when I'm doing these lease options, I don't ever count on selling the property anyway. I'm going to pay it off from the option money and the rents coming in. Because every 1 to 2 years, they're going to move out, you're going to put somebody else in there and get another $5,000 down.
That makes sense.
Is it hard to get them out if they default?
You have to evict them. That's it. It's an eviction. It's an eviction on a lease option, and you always have a separate lease and a separate option. So if they do default, you take your lease into eviction court. You don't even take your option in there.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. It's all good ideas. Thank you.
That was a lot of good ideas there for you, wasn't it?
It was,
yeah. That's good stuff. You asked good stuff.
That's great. That's great. Celia, I want you to be on here every week. Where you been, girl?
Hey, I've been making money, honey. I don't have time.
I love it.
We're coming down in August. We're signed up for the August.
I know you are, and I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to seeing you again.
Yes, dear. I can't wait.
I know. It's going to be a blast. We'll have a good time.
I told
Larry,
Gene,
thanks
I said, you know what? This is so crazy. This is easy money.
That's all.
Well, Larry, thanks for your advice on that. I'll see you. I'll be down there in July for your
That's awesome. Circle. That's awesome. I'm looking forward to it. That'll be great. Yeah. We'll have a lot of fun.
Yep,
so
good.
Who else has a question? I want to make sure everybody gets their question answered.
Yeah, Larry, it's Dave Connor from Arlington. How you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good. say, I want to get your input. With our, we've been doing some driving for dollars, came across this vacant house, been vacant for a long time, and looked up the owner. Well, it shows he's in prison. It's got an address of him in prison. Any ideas on how to approach that?
Yes, I do. Absolutely.
Okay.
I've bought houses from people in prison before, believe it or not.
Okay, cool.
So every prisoner has what's called, I believe it's called either an advocate or like a legal aid, and you
okay.
have to go through their attorney to, because they, and it's an attorney is basically what it is. It's like a staff attorney at the prison, and
okay.
anytime they have to sign any legal documents or collect, get money or anything, it has to go through that. So I would contact the prison that he's in,
okay,
and I would find out who is his personal representative in the prison and find out what you need to do to send him an offer to purchase that property.
Okay, so I'm sending the offer to purchase to this advocate or legal aid?
Well, you will probably, they'll probably tell you to send it to the inmate, but
okay.
but they do have to have their own, I mean, they have on staff, like, people to help them take care of business and stuff.
Okay, because in the address, I mean, it's, I believe that's probably his inmate number or whatever, and it's all there under the address. So, I mean, I just send him a simple letter saying I'm interested in buying your house.
Well, first of all, I would call and find out what the procedure is, right?
Call the prison, okay.
Call them and talk to somebody in the business administration office and find out what the procedure is. Because I would imagine it's not the same all over. When I bought a house from somebody, it was actually a prison that was in California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then they gave me, like, instructions on how to send the money. I can't remember if we wired it or sent a check, but the check had to go, like, to the I think it was a check, actually, and it had to go to the, you know, the prison and say, like, four inmate number, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And so that guy was able to buy a lot of cigarettes for the next 10 years. <You
know? laughs>
Yeehaw. Exactly. So he could pay people off to keep from beating him up, I guess, you know. But,
was it a pretty motivated seller since he wasn't going anywhere?
Well, in my case, the person in prison was just one of about five heirs I was buying the property from. So,
oh, okay.
So I was not buying the property just from him. It's just he had a little bit of money coming. And he was just one of five, I believe it was. But right. I did have to track him down and find out where he was and go through that whole advocate or whatever it is they call it. So, but the first thing I would do is call the prison, find
okay.
out what the procedure is, say I've got some business to transact with an inmate. How do I get documentation to him?
Okay.
Yeah. Does he have a personal representative? You know, by saying things like, does he have an advocate or a personal representative that I need to go through? They'll know you know a little bit about what you're doing, and they'll treat you better than just saying, hey, how do I get in touch with Bobby Smith? You know, you see
Got
what I'm
it.
Saying?
Yeah. Okay. Great. Yeah. Well, appreciate that.
You're
yeah.
very welcome. Let us know how it works out, okay?
I will.
Awesome. And you could also FedEx that stuff too. That's what I would do.
Okay.
Yeah. Instead of just regular mail, just send
yeah.
it. Even if you just send it priority mail, it'll get there in a couple of days.
Okay.
But if you send it FedEx, put a return FedEx envelope in there with it, already addressed. So all they got to do is stick it back in. You got to make it easy for those people because they can't be going to the post office or anything. You know what I mean?
That's funny.
So you got to make it easy on them. So remember that when you're communicating with them, okay?
Okay. I'm good.
Good.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Hope it works out. Let us know.
Okay, will do.
Awesome. Anybody else have a question?
Yeah. Hi, Larry. This is Lisa in Clearwater, Florida.
Hey.
How are you doing?
Excellent.
Hey, guys.
How about you?
I'm fine. I'm driving.
Well,
listening and driving tonight. Oh, everything's all right. My question is, I listened to your webinar or something where it was with CamaPlan. I want to get my IRA over to a self-directed.
Right.
And I can't seem, yeah, I can't even seem to get up with anybody there. Is there, they're still in business and there's still a connection between your inner circle and them? Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, how did you try to reach out to them?
I listened to the webinar, then I went to the directed email address for Inner Circle members, and I put in a request for contact, and all I've gotten, this was about 2 weeks ago now, over 2 weeks ago, all I've gotten is some autoresponder type information, which I'm already, you know, okay with what I'm going to do and what I need to do. I just
Here's
need somebody
need
to get
do,
up
okay?
with me.
You
Go ahead.
You send me an email telling me that you're trying to reach out to CamaPlan to get your account set up, but you're not getting
okay.
a response. And I will
okay.
reply to you and copy the correct
right.
person, okay? So,
all right, sounds great.
So you'll be right in touch with them, and between the three of us, if they know I got involved, they will respond to you right away, okay?
I sure appreciate it. Thank you. All right, I'll do that.
You're very welcome. My pleasure, okay?
Yep, thank you.
Awesome. Who else has a question?
Hey, Larry, this is Mary from Texas.
Hey, Mary, how are you?
I'm doing okay. We're still trying to get an offer accepted somewhere so we can get started. But in the last week, you know, I told you we'd put in like 11 bids on HUD properties.
Right.
And we were trying as much as we could and with our lack of experience to use the formula that you gave us when we were out in the Carolinas, but we've gotten several counters back, like within the last, like I think the 20th is when they started sending the counters.
Right.
And they were very close. A couple of them were pretty close to the initial ones that I had put in. Like, and these are not huge towns, but you know they are fairly close to larger areas where people can drive to go to work. There was one that the asking price was, and this was a mobile home, a 3-2, and it was 1,300 square feet. The asking price initially was $50,000, and after I did all the calculations, I had offered them $24,000, and within a week, they had come down to $30,000.
Wow.
And so I think we countered back at 26.5, and they came back and said the minimum bid they would take was 29,568. And then Joe just looked on realtor.com and it says it's off market now. So I think somebody else may have bid on it and they may have taken somebody else's bid. But I'm just
like
noticing
it.
That toward the end of the second quarter. This has happened, like there's three properties I'm looking at. One was started out at 36 and they sent something back and said now their minimum bid was 31.6. I had offered 25.5. And another one with asking prices $42,000 initially, and then I only offered him $14,400 for that one, and then they came back and the minimum bid was $29,000. This $29,568 seems to keep coming up. I don't know how that was on two properties. They came back and said that was the minimum bid they would accept. So the question I have is, are we just going too low? you know, if we're like within $4,000 or $5,000 of when they finally come back at the end of the month or the end of the quarter and say, you know, and then somebody else snaps it up, should we go a little higher or should we just keep doing what we're doing? I don't know. It just seems like we've put in an awful lot of offers and we're, it seems like on some of them we're getting close, but then as soon as it gets down to around where we think we should be, it's just a little higher and somebody else gets the bid.
Right. Well, two things I want to share with you, okay?
Okay.
First of all, what they will take has no relation to what you will buy it for, okay? In other words, your price might be $26,000. That's the absolute most you can pay. Now, if they don't accept 26, okay, maybe their lowest is 35, just because their lowest is 35 doesn't mean you're going to go up to 35. Does that make sense?
It does. I just wonder if we're being, you know, we're overestimating for repairs or,
I don't think so, and here's the reason I don't think so, which is the second part of my answer, is 12 offers, especially with HUD, is not near enough to determine whether or not you're doing something wrong. 12 offers and not near enough. You got to make a lot more offers than that, especially with HUD, to get a good deal. Now, to me, if you've made 12 offers and you're already getting some good counters and you're getting close, I think that's phenomenal. I would say, if anything, you're probably bidding too much if you made 12 offers and you got two or three that were pretty close to coming together. If anything, I would be nervous that you're paying too much or offering too much. Because I don't get anywhere with 12 offers. It would take me a year and a half to buy a house if I was making 12 offers every few weeks or whatever.
So when you say an offer, does that mean each individual property, or are you saying each offer, like if you have 10, well, say, for example, properties. If you bid on 50 properties and then you bid on them every single day, are you counting that, like 50 times 5 for 250 a week as it being the same property, you're just putting in a bid every day and then upping the...
Yeah, let's say I make 100 bids a day.
Okay.
5 days a week, that's 500 offers a week.
Okay.
But I'm not counting like every counter back and forth. Like if they counter and then I counter back, if they counter and I counter back, I don't count that as three bids on one property. I count it per property. Yeah, I might bid on every property this every day, but I'm counting a bid as on a property. Am I making sense at all?
Yeah, but what I'm trying to come to in my mind too is, you know, like our realtor is saying that, you know, that when they send back this thing and say, okay, the minimum bid they'll accept is $29,568. So this, and he said sometimes if you keep putting in bids for lower than that, that they'll block your bid. Is that been your experience, or, you know, I mean, do we just have to figure, well, we're just never going to get that house, or do you just keep putting it in every day at a different price?
I have never in my life heard anybody say, if you keep putting in low bids, they're going to block your bid. I have no idea what that means, and I've never heard that before. Has anybody else ever heard that?
No.
The word he used was cancel.
No.
And we asked him about it, and he said it's something they've just come out with in the last couple of months because it's becoming so much of a seller's market, and they're not dealing so much. And I don't know if that's Texas or if it's everywhere or what. But
it could be. What's the name of the asset manager? Do you know?
Page.
No.
Sage Acquisitions in Texas.
Sage, okay. Okay, I haven't heard of that. I haven't heard of that, but I would want to hear it from two or three more people before I believed it.
So Sage Acquisitions is the one that cancels your bid? Because that Sage is one of the ones that we've been dealing with.
Well, Sage, Sage Acquisitions, but Sage is what's called an asset manager.
Right.
Banks and HUD and VA and all of them, they hire what's called an asset manager to dispose of the property and sell it. And then the asset manager, they're the ones that have the house winterized. They change the locks. They put the stickers in the window and all that stuff. And they hire a local agent to list it on the MLS. So Sage is an asset manager. And there's like right now with HUD, there's an asset manager in every state. Sometimes it's like Sage is in more than just one state. But HUD typically has – HUD has moved to a model of one asset manager per state. And it could be the same asset manager in multiple states, but they're only going to have one. Like in South Carolina and North Carolina, it used to be Ofori and PIMCO and Home Telos. But now they only have one in the state.
So you don't think that they're canceling our bids, even if
personally,
it's minimal?
No, I don't think that.
No, I don't think so. But, Larry, can I jump in for a minute?
Sure.
And I know you're the cheap one and don't want to pay and all that stuff, but you're not new at this. So here's where I'm coming from. What I do is I look at the upside. I see what they want. But, for instance, the one I got in Florida, I paid 52 something. I think they wanted about 60. But I'm putting that back on the market for 109. So if I had bid 40-something or 30-something, I wouldn't have gotten that deal.
Right.
So I look at it, okay, what's my upside? What does the house need? If it needs next to nothing and I'm going to make 50 grand, I'm going to do that.
And you can absolutely do that. Mary and Joseph are wholesaling, though. Right, Mary?
Oh, okay.
Right.
Different deal.
Right. They're not doing a fix and flip. And yeah, they're in Texas,
and they're not doing
which is a fairly business. Fairly hot market. But in wholesaling, your margins are much thinner.
Oh, yes, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Got it. I didn't
realize
that.
Well, we would consider seller financing, too. And I guess that I'm – under the impression that there's a little more wiggle room with seller financing.
There would be
a lot more wiggle room.
But there is a lot more wiggle room. However, you know, there's another step involved. You got to sell the property twice, meaning you got to sell the property, then you got to sell the note, and you may have to season it depending on who your note buyer is. So now you got to find a buyer that wants to live in it and has money to put down, and then you got to find a note buyer willing to buy the note from you.
But it's still easier to find a property with a little, I would think, with your margins aren't quite as thin.
Right. Right. That is true. That is true. It's one more step. You're selling, you know, you're selling the property. I call it selling the property twice because you got to sell the property, then you got to sell.
Right.
Property.
Right. But if there's enough money in
there's
it,
a bigger payday at
discount.
The end.
Right.
Well, and the thing is, there's also, you can, if you want to, so instead of making 50, you make 30 and take a discount on the note. Say, I'll take a discount. Give me 30. I'm good. I'm
there
out.
There you go.
Next.
Next is right. That's good. I like that. That's good. Mary, does any of this help at all?
Yeah, it does. I still think we probably could have made money with a couple of these.
There you go. So go with your gut, Mary.
Larry?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Yes.
This is Xochitl, Xochitl Vasquez, also in Texas.
Hey, how are you?
Very blessed, thank you. If I may, I just wanted to comment on Mary. I've been seeing the same thing, and please let me know if I'm doing this wrong. I'm not counter offering on the counter offer that HUD is sending. We're just doing a new one every single day or every other day on that property. And we have seen the same thing that Mary was talking about. We had that property in Electra that she probably saw, and we missed it for $4,000 and banged my head over it. But we did the numbers, and we thought that was the right thing, whatever we offer, and it's gone. Like you say, do not cry over spilled milk, and I just move on and continue doing more. but I haven't been as successful as she was telling me. But it did help me to see in your email that once I get to a point where I can check it out, that with the wholesale analyzer, it gives me a better idea of how far I can go, even from what from what HUD is showing me that I should go, that they want to take. That's like the wholesale analyzer is where I'm stopping at. And sometimes I try to call even in the MLS, whoever is marketing or whoever is showing, just to find out if I'm okay with the repairs for whoever wants to buy it, who I want to wholesale it. So in a few words, we're seeing the same problem, but we are not touching the counteroffer. We're doing a new one every other day. Is that wrong? That's probably why I haven't heard about any rejection or any hold or any freezing or whatever that means on our offers, because we're just doing a new one. Is that wrong? Should I be not putting a new one but touching the one that they're sending back?
I don't think it's necessarily wrong, but you can talk to your agent and try it both ways and see what you get the best results with. But don't base your results on just two or three deals. You're going to have to do this for a little time, like over a month or two period of time, and do it with a lot of different properties to see if you start seeing a pattern. You can't base it off of two or three deals and say, by countering back, you get a lot more accepted because I got two accepted, out of whatever. So you're gonna have to test that a little bit to see if there is a difference.
Okay. It does. And I've been blessed. We have a good relationship with the agents, so we are allowed, just like you told us, but I'm at that point where I have her NAID and I can go ahead and do the offers myself.
Good.
I actually hired my daughter to do it. She's the one that is helping me with that.
That's
here
awesome.
They are. So we were very blessed that she opened right away and she's letting us do it on our own for her, so she can just hire someone that can take care of that. But I just wanted to make sure that it was okay to do a new one, just to send a new offer every other day instead of
absolutely
counter offer. Okay, good.
Good.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I hope that helped.
Yes, it does.
So this is Deb and Matthews again. I got a question about that.
Hey.
With HUD offers. Hey. So if you don't get a counter offer, you go ahead and submit another bid. And how much do you increase that bid? And how do you keep track of all the previous bids that you've been doing before that to know what you're bidding anymore? How do you keep track?
That's a good question. We use a spreadsheet. And on this spreadsheet, it has our maximum bid. Let's say our maximum bid is $50,000, okay?
Okay.
Well, $50,000 is going to be our Friday bid. On Monday, now there is a percentage to this, but I'm just going to give you numbers just so you get the concept, okay?
Okay.
But the bid does change by a percentage every day. But if our maximum bid is $50,000, our Monday bid is going to be $46,000. Tuesday is going to be $47,000. Wednesday is going to be $48,000. Thursday is going to be $49,000. And Friday is going to be $50,000. And then on Monday, it's going to be $46,000. Tuesday, $47,000. $48,000. $49,000. $50,000. On Monday, it starts over again. Okay? And that way, there's a different bid every single day. Remember, HUD is a computer, okay? There's a different bid every day, and it's amazing. Sometimes they accept a bid on Monday or Tuesday when we bid higher the week before on Friday. So it's a different bid number every day. That's just the way we do it. And it's on the spreadsheet, and we know what our bid is, and until we change that bid amount, that's exactly what it's going to be every day.
Where is the spreadsheet you're talking about?
It comes with the HUD book. it does come with the HUD book. And what you do is we have a virtual assistant every day that exports the list from HUD, and then he imports it into the spreadsheet. And then we keep track of all our deals on the spreadsheet. And we make notes on the spreadsheet. There's links on the spreadsheet to Zillow, to Realtor.com, to Trulia, well, not Trulia, but to Realtor.com, Zillow.com, HUDHomeValue.com, and HUDHomeStore.com.
Okay. So whether you get a counter bid or counter offer or anything, just go ahead and make another bid the next day.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, we're trying to bid on everything every day. And by the way, guys, I haven't said this to anybody out there in the public, but you guys are Inner Circle students. I'm working on a new HUD spreadsheet, and it should be done in the next, I'm guessing, 2 or 3 weeks. But it's going to be the bomb. It's going to be better than the one we have now, and I'm really excited about it. So I will be passing that out to my Inner Circle students as soon as I get it done. But I've got a spreadsheet guru that he's been in my office already 2 or 3 times and showing us and he comes in, shows us what he's got done. We make little tweaks, and then he goes back and works on it. And supposedly next time we get together, it's going to be complete, and he's going to demo the completed version for us. So I'm really excited about it. I've added a few new features. Like one of the features I'm having him add is I noticed a lot that, like, HUD may show a house is, let's say, a 2-bedroom, 1-bath, and maybe it shows it as 800 square feet, when really on Realtor.com or Zillow.com or Trulia, it's really a 3-bedroom, 1-bath, and instead of 800 square feet, it might be 1,800 square feet, okay? So it's going to look for differences in square footage, differences in bedrooms, and differences in baths, because some people may not be bidding because it's not even showing up in their search results. Let's say somebody said, set up a search result of I only want 3+ bedrooms. Well, if HUD Home Store shows it as a 2-bedroom, it's not even showing up in their search results. But we could look at it and tell, you know, because of the anomaly, the difference, that it's really a 3-bedroom. Or maybe they set square footage at 1,200+, and it shows 800 when it's really 1,800. So that's just one of the new features that I'm having added to the new spreadsheet.
Good.
But I'll let you guys know, and we'll pass it out whenever it gets done, and we test it and tweak it and get all the bugs worked out of it. Because anytime you do something like that, we're going to have to debug it for a little while.
Nice. Thanks, Larry.
Looking forward to it. Sure. So does anybody else have a question?
Yeah, Larry, this is Guido in Aiken.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, I came across when we asking the realtors for, when we check with them on a specific listing and ask them for other properties they could send our way. If we get that list, then a lot of times I see that that listing agent is not the listing agent for those recommended properties. So do I go straight to the correct listing agent, or do I stay with the original listing agent, which might never have been in a certain property, to give me the details on repairs and stuff?
So let me see if I get this correctly. You've got not a listing agent, but really it's a buyer's agent that is sending you a list of properties that could end up another agent as the listing agent. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
Okay, good. Now, I'm very glad you brought this up, okay? Here's what you should always, always, always do. If you found a property on your own you can contact the listing agent, and you should contact the listing agent, because nobody knows more about that property than the listing agent, okay?
Yeah.
However, if a buyer's agent put you on their list and they sent you a property, you can still call the buyer's agent. Now, make sure you talk to your buyer, you could still call the listing agent. Make sure you talk to your buyer's agent about this and they know what you're doing, okay, and you guys talk about it. But I would still call the listing agent, but when you call, I would say, hey, I'm calling about your property at 125 Oak Street. I have a buyer's agent, but my buyer's agent suggested I call you direct, so I'm not calling them. They're calling you. You call them back, and then they call me. So I'm calling you direct, but just know when we submit an offer, it's going to go through my buyer's agent. So always dance with the one that brought you, okay?
Okay.
Always go through the agent that sent you the deal to make your offer. Does that make sense?
Yep, makes perfect sense. Yep, thank
you. Good, good, good. That's good. I'm really glad you brought that up because so many people don't do that, and realtors hate that. And I don't blame them because they're on commission only, right?
Yeah, makes sense. Yep.
Exactly. I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else have a question?
Hi, Larry, I have a question about the ASAP.
Uh-huh.
Did Turk, I missed it unless they didn't have it. I didn't get a recording for that session. So do you have a recording? Because I looked for it in the email, didn't see it on the inner circle.
There is actually a call-in number. You can call in and get the recording. Let me see if I can find what it is, okay? I don't know if I can find it right here in front of me, but I might be.
Is it the same number you call in for the call?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Okay.
Let's see. I don't think it is. Let me see if I can find it. No, I can't find it here, but if you will email customerservice@larrygoins.com, they'll send you the link for it.
Is it the same one for the recordings for this session? You know?
I don't think so. I don't think so,
right.
Because if it was the same one for this one, then we couldn't keep them separated.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you'll email customerservice@larrygoins.com and just ask for the ASAP replay, and it was all about time management this past week. I was actually on it, and it was some good information.
Well, I have been looking for it, but I haven't been seeing it because I know I remember in the conversation with the ASAP, one of the members asked was about the email and about Ted was talking about it being shared on Facebook because he didn't want nobody else to know it if there wasn't in the inner circle.
Yeah, I think it might, you know, you might have a point. It might actually be on the, let's see.
I looked on the Inner Circle Facebook page. It's not on there. And I've been looking for it in my email. It's not in that either.
Oh, really?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
Because I know Candace said she was going to share it, the recording, but I've been looking for it, but I hadn't seen it. I had forgot about it, got tied up with something else.
Yeah.
And by the time I thought about it again, it was about 10 o'clock. I'm sure it was over by then.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so let me look here. It says here, this is June 7th was the last one that's the recording that it got posted. So,
yeah.
And my marketing guy's on vacation until July 1st, So,
right.
But I don't think that would hold it up. But if you'll just email customer service, Corn will help you out with it. He'll make sure he either gets you a number to call in, or he or sends you a link or something.
Well, is it possible that Candace can send a link in the email for all these calls to where it'll come up if you can download it on your calendar as a reminder for these calls on the phone on Monday?
Yeah, that's a really good point. We're working on a couple of things. We're working on even a membership login where you can log in and get all the Inner Circle benefits in one place. These calls, the ASAP calls, as well as documents and forms and replays of stuff and a lot of stuff in one location. And we're in the process of working on that and getting that done. And I'm hoping that'll be done in the next, within the next 30 days.
Right. Okay. Well, is it possible that we can, so if we need to be in on any of these calls and have any questions, that a link can be sent in the email where you can attach the dates to your calendars to when the calls are going to be, the days and the time,
number? That's a really good question. Let me ask about that. A calendar reminder is basically what you're saying.
Well, what it's going to be, because when you have a link on it, it's going to automatically send it to your calendar. Like if you got a Google Calendar, it's going to send it to your calendar, and it's going to put on there that the ASAP conference call or Larry's questions and answers call on this Monday and at this time. And this is the number that you call in along with the code.
Right. Let me check into that. I just made a note of that and wrote it down, so hopefully I'll be able to do something about that.
Okay.
It's every Monday at 9:00. Every Monday.
Well, it's these calls are the second and fourth Monday. Turk's calls are the first and third Monday.
So we're stuck with you. What you're saying is every Monday night.
Say that again.
Yeah.
We're stuck with you every Monday night. Just write it down.
Every Monday night, first, second, third, and fourth. The only weeks we don't have a call is the fifth Monday. When there's a fifth one.
Confuse us.
It's either you or it's Turk. It's either you or Turk every Monday night.
It's either me or Turk. And I don't know what his call-in information is. It might be the same number. I don't even know.
No, it's not.
No, it's a different number.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a different number and code.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't access Turk's recorded calls. There's no link to access Turk's recorded calls. But the Inner Circle, you can access, but not Turk.
Okay. Well, we're in the process of getting all that done because having his calls on, I mean, he just started it in June. So we're still getting a few of the kinks worked out. But we do have all of the recordings. And I know some people, because I get reports, some people, there's a number you can dial in and listen to the recording. I don't know what that number is offhand, but there is a number you can dial in to listen to the recording.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yours come up, the one for your call, to listen to the recording, it's in the email, but it's not anything for Turk. That's why I was asking.
Oh, okay.
Right. No, there's not.
All right. Let me make a note of that.
That's your homework.
There you go. Cool. Anybody else have a question?
Yeah, Larry, this is Lisa again. Could you tell me your email address real quick for that camera plan question?
Sure. It's very simple. Larry@LarryGoins.com.
Super deluxe. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, Larry. What's your face?
Go ahead.
I didn't want to step on. Somebody else was asking questions the same time I was.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Okay.
on the Roth IRA, can you lend money to your LLC to buy a deal?
No. That would be called a prohibited transaction. But what you can do is your Roth IRA and your LLC could partner at the same time, where your LLC put up a percentage, your Roth put up a percentage, but you cannot loan money to your LLC. That would be a prohibited transaction. And having said that, I don't even recommend that you partner with your LLC. I wouldn't do that, although that's not a prohibited transaction.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Anybody else have a question?
Larry, you got Nathan's information.
Yeah, you are you working with Nathan?
I am.
Okay, do you have his contact info?
I don't have anything.
Okay, if you'll email customer service, I'm not sure which contact information, but email customer service and they'll get you in touch with him.
Okay.
Awesome.
Larry,
at LarryGoins.com.
I got it. Customer service at LarryGoins.com.
You got it.
Okay.
Larry?
Yes.
Hey, it's Olga. I just want to follow up on the same question that was about the IRA. You do not recommend to partner with your IRA, but can the IRA be just an investor, not the equity partner?
An investor in what?
In the transaction where you have equity partners, different LLCs, and then the IRA comes as an additional investor but not the equity partner. Is that something different, or is it still not a good idea?
Well, it sounds like you're, like what I said, your LLC and your IRA can partner on the same deal. However, you would not want to loan money to your LLC or borrow money from your LLC.
But then it's not loaning to the LLC. It's loaning to this new joint venture partnership, right?
So explain the transaction to
me. Okay. So let's say two companies form a partnership and they're equity partners in buying a property.
Say that again,
ma'am. And then there are two LLCs buying the properties to do the flip, fix and flip.
Right.
Equity partnership. And then they need to bring the third lender who just lends money for the percentage, not partnering in any work, not doing anything,
right,
not having equity. Would that investor, this type of lender, could be the IRA, or is that still an
no
issue?
Not no. if you are one of the owners of the LLCs that is buying the property.
Okay, got it.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. You're very welcome.
The reason I asked that, Larry, was because and I know you know Ron LeGrand,
right,
you know, taking a lot of his stuff. He used to say at his seminars that you could borrow money from your Roth IRA to buy properties, and the profit goes back into your Roth IRA. That's kind of where I got confused.
Well, he is, and maybe he explained it a different way, but you cannot do business with your IRA. Your LLC cannot do business with your IRA. You can partner with it, but you can't borrow from or lend to it. That's
because
what's called a prohibited transaction.
Yeah, the Roth IRA is in my name, and then the LLC is in my name.
Right. Let's say you found a property you wanted to buy for $50,000. Your IRA could put up $25,000, and your LLC put up $25,000. Okay, to buy the property. and the reason I don't recommend you doing this is because Let's say that that was all the money that your IRA has. All of a sudden, you get a tax bill that comes in. The tax bill is $1,000. Your IRA has no money. Well, your LLC can't just write a check for that $1,000. Okay? That would be a prohibited transaction because now your LLC is funding more than 50% of any of the bills that come in. So I always tell people, if you're going to do a deal with your IRA, make sure you don't use all the money and you've got some reserves so in case there's any bills come up or any more repairs than you didn't know needed, then you have the money to be able to pay for it. So I do not like partnering with the IRA. If you're going to do it, just borrow the money from a non-recourse lender, a private money lender or something like that. That's what I would suggest.
Okay. All right. Good.
Good, good. I hope that helped.
Yes, yes. It keeps us out of trouble.
Excellent. Anybody else have a question?
Hey, Larry, it's Dave Mimic.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
It's good, good. Hey,
did you hear me talking about the new HUD spreadsheet?
Yeah, I heard that. Sounds pretty sweet. I'm anxious to look at it.
So I got that idea from you about the anomalies.
Anomaly? Yeah, that's what I figured.
I just want to give credit where credit's due.
Well, thanks. I've been updating my spreadsheet too, and I've definitely got that on there. I've been working with that.
That's great. That's great. We're going to have it. Do you have yours going out to Realtor.com and Zillow and pulling in the number of bedrooms and baths so you don't have to have a VA do it manually?
No, I don't, but that would be nice.
Well, that's what ours is supposed to be doing.
So is that right?
Yeah, I'll make sure you get a copy whenever we get it done.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. I have my little munchkins. My two boys are doing that for me now. Keep them busy.
That's what you call slave labor.
Yeah, they call me a child labor. They're going to report me to the authorities.
That's funny.
But, my question is about that. I picked up that HUD property. I've been putting, you know, a billion bids in on the HUD properties in Georgia. A billion.
You got one though, right?
That's awesome.
I got one. And as I drill down on each one of them, I'm finding more and more that are looking pretty good. And so, but I guess, you know, there's so many moving parts. You know, my next step, today they sent me the email saying that the contract's been ratified. We're now under contract and we need to close by July 23rd. They don't give me enough time, or they do give me enough time, but they shoot you, and the clock's ticking. So I figured I was going to put the signs out. You know, I got those in my garage, put all those signs out. I need to find somebody to hire. Should I target more towards seller financing, or should I target more for a wholesale? I didn't think there was quite enough for a wholesale. So, or maybe I should go for a buy and hold cash buyer.
Well, it just depends. Is this in Albany, Georgia?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So do you think it's cheap enough where you can wholesale the property?
I don't.
Okay. So what are the comps coming in at?
About 79, around 75 to 80.
And what did you pick it up for?
47.
There's money in that. There's wholesale money in that.
Yeah.
You think so?
You could probably sell that, you know, you said 47?
Yeah, 47.
Yeah, if the comps are around 80, just put it out there for 59.9 and try to find somebody that's going to, you know, live in it. Or, well, I shouldn't say try to find somebody. Let them find you. Just put some signs out and try to wholesale it. See what kind of response you get.
Okay.
You might find an investor that wants to rent it out.
Yeah. What are the rent costs?
That's what I'm hoping.
$850?
Yeah, around $850.
Okay.
Have to double check that.
Yeah, all right. $59.9.
That's good.
Yeah. Or $57.9, something like that. You make a quick 10 on it.
Yep. Okay. All right. I just got to get somebody to put the signs out for me, so I'll be hitting Craigslist ads and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you heard us talk about that earlier, right?
We did, yeah.
Good. Good, good.
So.
Can you sell the house before you close on it?
You can have it sold before you close on it, yeah, and you can do a back-to-back closing, but you cannot assign a HUD contract.
Hmm. Oh. I'd have to close on it first and then close on the second one.
Yes, but you can do it 30 minutes apart.
Yep, that's the plan.
There you go. That's good. Congratulations on that deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have like three or four other ones I could pull the trigger on, but I'm like, maybe I should just kind of get the kinks out on this first one and then start pulling the trigger on the other ones.
Well,
what do you think?
It depends on how you want to play it. I understand you want to be very cautious, you know, and I get that. I get that. I don't blame you, especially since you're in Utah and you're buying in Georgia.
Yes. I'm going to go out there next month, right after the 4th of July.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go out there for a week or so and just kind of get my bearings wrapped around it.
Check out the market. You're going to fly into Atlanta?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Frontier has really cheap airlines, right? Direct flights, $100-$200. Puts me at the doorstep.
Nice.
Man, you can't beat that.
Nope.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, check it out. Maybe here's another idea too, Dave. You might want to run a few Craigslist ads to try to find some boots on the ground, so you can meet with them, have lunch with them, take them out to a couple properties, and then you'll find that person that can put out your signs, can show the properties, maybe even somebody to qualify your buyers for you. You let them in the house or whatever, you know, and maybe I would try to have 3 or 4 or 5 meetings scheduled before you even get there.
Definitely. Awesome. That's a good idea. I like that.
Yeah. Unless, like you said, you're staying a week, so it wouldn't be that big a deal. But, you know, I would have some meetings with realtors, bird dogs, you know, wannabe investors. And
mm-hmm.
You might want to even schedule it, look and see what RIA Group is closest to Albany. I don't think it's Atlanta, but I would check and see and schedule your trip around the RIA Group meeting and attend that meeting.
Okay. Albany's about halfway between Atlanta and Jacksonville. So.
Okay.
It's a little ways. It's 4 hours away from Atlanta, so it's a little bit of ways down.
Yeah, I would find out, because there's got to be a group down there somewhere. Look on not only the National RIA website, but look on the Meetup at meetup.com. Look for that as well, and find out if there's any group close by and schedule your trip close to when they're going to have their meeting. But I would call first because – you know, sometimes they still show meetings online, but they quit having them, or maybe there's 5 people show up or something, and then you don't need to worry about scheduling around that.
Right. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Good. Well, good luck with it.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Anybody else have a question? Man, you guys have had some really good questions tonight. Dang, I didn't realize that we've been on here over an hour and a half. It's good, though. It's good stuff.
All good stuff.
Good stuff. Yes.
This is Coaching again. May I ask a second question today?
Okay, I can barely hear you.
Okay, I have another question because this is all foreclosures. I sent an offer in with an agent on a foreclosure here in Texas, and when he sent the check,
Let me see. Can you hear me better? Let me see if that works better.
I can't understand much of what you're saying.
I'm fine. Let's be the line.
Get a lot of feedback now. Try
can
it
you
again.
Hear me now?
I
Let
can,
me try one
go ahead,
more time.
Try it again.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay. I placed an offer with an agent here in Texas, and when he sent for me to sign, to DocuSign, they scratch off on the deed from a general deed to a special deed. That's not something that I should be worried about, right? I still signed it and sent it, but I just want to make sure that I didn't need to ask about why did you change it for a special deed by hand.
I think I heard you say earlier it was a foreclosure, correct?
Yes, yes.
That is totally normal and acceptable because any bank, lender, HUD, whatever, is going to give you a special warranty deed, also sometimes called a limited warranty deed.
Okay.
So that is totally fine.
Okay. Now, I found that through MLS, and I found another one that I actually was work on sending today in Waco, Texas.
Uh-huh.
But I found the bank subsidiary that is handling the account. But when I look in the MLS, now it's on bid for assets, like a whole listing agent, and it's going into a bidding process. I guess I can still go to the bank and place that. That's how I try to do it anyway today. Send it to the subsidiary that handles the account, but do not even touch the bid for assets statement for the same property. They had it on bid for assets, and this other financial subsidiary for the bank is offering it on their website. And I could place an offer on both.
Well, a property could be listed on the MLS, and then they post it on bid for assets to get bids.
Okay. So you can just choose whichever you want.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense.
Right.
Thank
there you.
You
You're very welcome. Anybody else have a question?
Hey.
Hey.
I was. Hey, Larry. Nana out.
What?
What?
I said Nana out.
Hey, come on! Killing my ear.
My God, that's terrible.
That's terrible.
It sounds like everybody's winding down.
Yep. Yeah, this old woman's out.
All right, Sheely, thanks a lot for playing along tonight and participating. You got some good advice.
Yeah, I can't wait to see you, honey. All right,
I know. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks a lot.
All right, honey. Everybody have a good night.
All right, you have a good night. Anybody else have a question?
This
Thank
is
you, Larry. Have a good night.
You're
Thanks,
very
Larry.
Welcome.
Appreciate it.
You're awesome.
Go ahead if you
Thank
have a question.
Yes, Larry. I have one last question. This is Ashish from Richmond.
Hey.
And I want to ask you if you have some good resources for like virtual assistants from where to hire them.
Yes.
Or, like,
Upwork.com. UPWORK.com. That's where I hire all my VAs.
Okay. Upwork.com. Okay. Okay. I'll look at it.
Excellent. Upwork.com.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Anybody else have a question?
Good night.
Good night. Have a good night.
Good night.
Anybody else before we go?
People all bail.
All right, going one.
Good night, and thank you.
Thank you
good
very
night,
much.
Larry.
Good night.
Appreciate you being on. All right, everybody, have a good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye, Larry.